from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning in our opening half hour, we turn our attention to Hurricane Sandy, its devastation, its origins, and its ongoing effects. It hit the East Coast and continues to affect millions of lives of Americans, and the death toll is already at 33. Then at 9:30, our focus will be on new research which shows that if revenue cuts continue on the 1965 Williamson Act, a significant amount of California open space will be lost. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Hurricane Sandy made landfall early Monday evening on the Jersey Shore, destroying part of the Atlantic City boardwalk, and the storm has already caused extensive flooding as well as widespread evacuations and power outages throughout the East Coast. Number of deaths presently is at 33, and 69 lives were taken before that in the Caribbean. That is before Sandy hit the East Coast. This opening Forum half-hour segment, we want to bring you the latest on the monster storm and also talk about its origins and perhaps where it's going and what we can expect. We want to first talk with James Barron, who is a reporter with the New York Times. He's in the New York Times newsroom in Midtown Manhattan. James Barron, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Hi, Michael. Thank you.
Well, it's pretty devastating, especially in Manhattan. And from your perspective, at this point, we have a paralyzed city, I guess.
It pretty much looks that way. Part of it is it's not what you expect here. You don't expect water as high as we had it last night along the roadways in lower Manhattan. And to the extent that last year, Tropical Storm Irene, we thought it might be a dress rehearsal for this, but as somebody said this morning, one of the officials, this was worse than the worst-case scenario.
Well, President Obama's already declared a federal disaster area, not only New York City, but Long Island, and you're expecting help and getting help at this point, I presume?
The officials say the cooperation has been great, and they expect it. The problem seems to be having enough people to get things back. This is going to take time to restore what we have. There's been damage to the tracks in the subways and the tunnels. There's been damage to the commuter rail lines, just, you know, lines that washed out along the way. There's been so much else that's just been uprooted that can't be put back together easily or quickly. So where on Sunday they were talking about they'd have the subway going within 12 hours, now they're talking about maybe they'll have parts of it in a day or two. But there are places where they're probably going to have to do major rebuilding. This is an order of devastation above what I think most people were expecting, including a lot of the people who were involved in the planning, who, you know, you can't predict it. Good though the predictions were, good though the forecasts were, it's just a huge storm system, and we're, what, 90 miles from where it came ashore, you know, where the worst of it really hit.
I think there may have been less expectation because of Irene the year before, which was anticipated to be far worse than it actually turned out to be. But according to Joseph Loda, quoted in your column, chairman of Metropolitan Transportation Authority, this is the most destructive experience in 108-year history of the New York subway system.
Yes, that's right. And remember, Irene was only the first time they'd ever shut it down. So this is the second in the history of the system. They'd never shut the whole system down before. So, yes, I think that's right. I mean, again, it was a dress rehearsal, and we all thought we got off easy. It isn't going to do that. This matched a storm in 1960. Well, I mean, sometimes in journalism nowadays, I feel like the old guy. I was 5 or 6 years old in 1960. I grew up in the D.C. area. I certainly don't remember that storm. This storm put slightly higher water at the lower end of Manhattan than that one did. I don't know why it didn't ruin the subways then, or if it did, they rebuilt it. But there's no lingering memory like that. Out on Long Island, people are already thinking this is going to be, once you can get there, once you can look at it, this is going to be like the famous storm of 1938. That carved a break in the land as the storm moved across and went to Rhode Island. Every time I go over the bridge, I think of that, that connects, you know, the end of Long Island with where, as it is now, with, you know, the towns beyond it. It used to be all one strip of land, and then this big, powerful hurricane went across and kept going across Long Island Sound and turned and went into Rhode Island, as I recall.
Well, I'm reading, these are the highest storm surges ever recorded, and yeah. Metropolitan New York got hit the worst. In fact, we've been talking about the subway system. What about Con Edison?
They've got a lot of lower Manhattan is out. About half of Manhattan is without power right now, and a good deal of their customers in Brooklyn. They've got a lot of work to do to get back online, get people back with the lights, and it's going to be difficult because there are places where the power lines are leaning, so they're going to have to decide how do they do that. How do you put another power line in where the ground is so damp that the trees are falling over, the ground is saturated because we had a couple of inches of rain, but with the wind it got driven in. So, you know, in the places where the power lines are overhead, and they're still there. The power lines haven't come down. What are they going to do where there are problems like that? And then there are the places where the lines are down across the roads, and where there's water, and you don't know what the what's under the water. Is there a live line under there? You know, it's like that in any flood. This is just worse here because we haven't had to cope with this, I don't think, on such a large scale. I certainly don't remember anything like this on a broad scale from essentially all the way up the East Coast, and certainly not in the New York area.
Any sense of just generally, if one can speak about this generally, about how people are coping?
It's so early. The storm is still going on as we talk, in a way. I mean, sheets of rain and then followed by, you know, bits of bright light. Well, that's what it was for parts of yesterday. It's the wind is still blowing through. We're just now on the trailing edge instead of the leading edge. So people are mostly seem to be staying indoors. I mean, it's not the total ghost town. There are some tourists out in Times Square here where the New York Times is today, as opposed to yesterday when everybody really was inside. But there's still gusts of wind that'll blow your hat off or blow your hood off, you know.
Or your toupee or whatever.
Or whatever. And so you really don't want to be out in this. You don't really, you can't really work on the cleanup, although the crews are trying to get a start on it. But there's still a certain amount of danger from things that could fly around or things that could get in the way.
Well, you got bridges closed. You got 7 subway tunnels under the East River flooded, but also other mass transit services suspended.
That's right. The governor said a while ago, about half an hour ago, that some buses would start running in about 5 hours and that the bridges would open about now. One of the other things that they're going to have to do is yesterday a construction crane atop an 80-story building, one of the tallest buildings in the city. It's under construction. The crane bent over. It's hanging, dangling across from Carnegie Hall. I figured they're going to have to wait until the wind dies down to figure how they can get up there and get the part that's hanging loose and bring it down safely.
Governor Cuomo actually sounded off about lack of compliance on some issues. Can you enlighten us on that?
Well, there's been more back and forth between Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey and the mayor of Atlantic City this morning because the Governor Christie said the mayor gave mixed signals on whether to evacuate from Atlantic City or not, and the problem there now is that the governor says they're having to do an urban search and rescue, which means they're looking for people who might not have survived because they did not get out. And Christie also said there was basically no place, if he goes over there in a helicopter, there was no place for him to land, so he's just going to have to look down as he goes by on an inspection tour this afternoon. Well, That's a level of, I guess, of frustration. If there's no way in, you can't send in any more help, any more responders, until you find a way to get them there. That's got to be frustrating. Here in New York, the mayor indicated yesterday that the compliance with his evacuation order was reasonable. You know, not everybody left. A lot of people chose to ride it out in the low-lying areas. And I think some of the ones that I've seen that our people have talked to were surprised. This gets back to your point earlier about we made it through Irene okay, so this is just another hurricane. But it wasn't.
James Barron with us from New York, in the New York Times office in Midtown, reporter for the New York Times. And appreciate very much your being with us this morning, and good luck.
Thanks very much.
That's James Barron. He mentioned New Jersey. We had a state of Governor Christie called the damage to New Jersey incalculable and said the Jersey Shore had been devastated. And in New Jersey, there are more than 2 million customers who were without power. That's as of 1:30 a.m. this morning. In Connecticut, the total reached nearly 500,000 customers. I mean, you can just really get a sort of sense of just remarkably devastating this has been. Adam Sobel is professor of climate and atmospheric science at Columbia University. He's in, Northwest Manhattan, actually in the sunny Morningside campus of Columbia University. And Adam Sobel, good to have you with us on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you.
How do things look from your perch, just to begin here?
Well, we're up on a hill here, and so there wasn't any flooding in this neighborhood, and the power stayed on as well. The outages were all roughly south of Midtown. So, you know, we had plenty of wind and rain, and it's still, you know, not great weather at the moment, although it's not really dangerous. But to see the flooding here, you had to go down to the river, which I did late last night, actually. But from here, it's fine. It's just, you know, most of us aren't going very far from the neighborhood, and so to see the worst of it, we're watching it on TV, just like everyone else.
Well, let's talk with you about this storm, a super storm, maybe even a perfect storm in some people's minds, the way it's been described. And it's a rare kind of hybrid superstorm because it was created by an Arctic jet stream, actually from the north, wrapping itself around a tropical storm from the south. So we're talking about really kind of a storm of all storms in many ways, aren't we?
Yeah, it is. I mean, when tropical cyclones come north, as most of them do late in their lives, they can do a few things. They can hit land and then they'll weaken, or they can hit cold water and then they'll weaken too, because a tropical cyclone gets its energy from the warm water. Sometimes, as in this case, they can interact with a more winter type of storm, which is, as you said, is a disturbance in the jet stream associated with temperature contrast between cold polar air and warmer air to the south. And when that happens, they can strengthen again. And that in itself, this was a particularly strong case of it, but that in itself is not so unusual. What's more unusual is the fact that this one got steered back toward land after that happened. And that was really what made it such an extreme event, the fact that this storm made landfall after undergoing this hybridization process. In most cases, a storm like this would be out in the sea, as the 1991 perfect storm was, for example, when it was at its most severe, and we wouldn't experience it. So, and in fact, the other thing is that the track was really the worst possible scenario for a storm surge. I mean, that's what we're seeing is the real long-term harm to the city in particular, is from the storm surge. The wind and rain, if it was just that, it'd be over by now, but it's the flooding that's the problem. And that was so severe because of the angle the storm came in at, came from the sea, moving from the east to the west, which is the opposite of the direction these things normally go. And because it did that, and because it came to the south of New York City, the winds going counterclockwise around the storm were at their strongest, because they're on the strongest on the right side of the storm, because that way the motion of the storm gets added to the counterclockwise wind around the storm, and you get the strongest winds on the right side. And also it means that the wind was pointing towards shore, and that's the worst possible direction for piling up the water and creating the storm surge.
Yeah, though there was actually, we were talking about Irene by comparison, there was actually more rainfall with Irene. It's just been the winds that have been so particularly devastating here. And we can, at this point, though, as the storm moves inward, expect it to be less powerful and less drenching as it moves inward.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the worst of the weather is already over here. I think, you know, inland, it's hard to say that the rainfall could lead to some problems. My guess is that it won't be as bad as Irene was in its inland impact, but it's probably too soon to say that. There's snow in some mountainous regions, but I think, I guess I don't want to call it too soon, but I would guess that for the interior parts of the East Coast that are going to get it, they won't have anything like the damage we have here, just because they're not going to be flooded by rising seawater, and that's as we've seen, going to be the real problem.
No, it's already gone to Chicago. I mean, it's moving inward. And by the way, if you'd like to join us, we're talking to Adam Sobel now, professor of climate and atmospheric science at Columbia University, and I'm going to ask him about the relationship of this storm, particularly to global warming. But if you'd like to join this conversation, it's a half-hour segment, and we'd like to hear from you if you have thoughts about the storm or if you have questions, particularly about its its effect, not only in impact but where it's headed. Feel free to join us. Our toll-free number is available to you, and it's 866-733-6786. Again, you can join us toll-free at 866-733-6786. You can also email us. Our forum email address is forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. How much, I know that a lot of this is speculative, Adam Sobel, but how much of this is really likely to be attributed as an outgrowth of global warming, or, I mean, this extreme weather in general, but the oceans are heating up more, it's extended the hurricane season. I mean, all that seems to be pretty clear, but how much is really attributable to climate change?
Yeah, it's such an important question, and it's one that a lot of us are going to be struggling with, and have been struggling with before this event, but are now going to be thinking about this event in those terms. I think there's a few basic things to keep in mind. I mean, the first one is that the climate is warming, and we can expect that to create more extreme weather of various kinds. But you can never attribute any particular weather event that happens on any given day to global warming in any direct way. Global warming can change the probabilities a little bit. And to what extent that change in the probabilities is clear, you know, to how much the global warming does contribute to any event varies from event to event. So, for example, if you have a big heat wave, it's fairly easy to see how that's related to global warming, because global warming is warming the climate, so it makes the temperature go up. So any heat wave is going to be warmer by however much the climate has warmed, very roughly speaking. And that kind of attribution is pretty clear. And you can say, well, this so much of it was caused by global warming. With hurricanes, actually, the science is still developing a lot. I think it's changed a lot in the last few years. We actually now are starting to think, the latest models are starting to show a certain amount of agreement that in a warmer climate, there will not necessarily be more tropical cyclones, more hurricanes. There are actually more likely to be fewer ones than more, or there could be the same, but that the ones there are will on average be more intense. Now, it's the most intense ones that are the most destructive, so whether the number of the most intense one goes up or not is unclear, because it's not clear which of those two factors will win, the fewer or the more intense. But that's for the whole world as a whole, and that's in an average over many, many years as the climate warms. For individual regions like the North Atlantic, where we are, the North Atlantic Tropical Cyclone Basin, it's much less clear what will happen. A lot more depends on the specific pattern the warming takes, whether the Atlantic warms a little more than our other regions or a little less. And an event like this is so fluky, I mean, so unusual in so many ways, And most of those ways can't be directly connected to global warming. The flow pattern in the atmosphere with the blocking high over Greenland, the very strong twist in the jet stream, and the tropical cyclone, the tropical cyclone just having to be in the right place at the right time. So, I mean, it's clear from that this event could have happened in a climate that wasn't warming, and it's not clear to what extent global warming will make this particular kind of event more likely in the future. It's just so unusual that we don't have the statistics we need to assess that. That's not to say that one should discount global warming as a factor. One shouldn't. It's just that we should be prepared for these sort of events in any case, and, you know, they could have happened in the past. It just happened to be that we got this one. And, you know, and the most extreme thing about it, again, was the track. And seeing how global warming affects the tracks of cyclones is one of the things I think we know the least about.
I just wanted to say that there's a sampling of a number of our listeners are jumping on this. In fact, Susan writes in an email to us, "I have a family in New Jersey whom I have been very worried about, but what really fries me is that with this Frankenstorm, part of the effects of global climate change, not a single politician will mention the C word. While people are dying and property lost, the rulers fiddle." Let me go, speaking about New Jersey, go to Justin Osiello, who is founding editor of the Jersey Shore Hurricane News. They're a Facebook-based news site founded in 2011 to cover Hurricane Irene. And Justin Osiello, good to have you with us on Forum. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to have you, and I'm interested in finding out what's going on presently. I mean, last time we read, rescue teams were rushing in to aid people stranded in Atlantic City and certainly also in areas of Bergen County where the tidal waves had overwhelmed the protective natural berm. What's the situation now as you read it?
Well, the situation right now in New Jersey is dire. There are still plenty of people who need to be rescued. Problem is that, especially in the barrier island communities along the coast, there's really no way to access people at this point. Governor Christie, for days prior to the storm, was advising people to please leave the barrier islands, especially. You know, these are little strips of land that are surrounded by a bay on one side and the ocean on the other side. And unfortunately, not everyone took those warnings seriously. Now, from what I'm gathering from a variety of sources and also from photos and videos, everything from Cape May County through Ocean County, well, including Monmouth County as well, along the coast has faced serious damage. Just some quick examples. In Brick Township on the Barrier Island in Ocean County, there are about 20 to 25 homes that are still burning from a fire last night. Of course, fire crews cannot reach those homes because there is no access. The bridge leading from the mainland to the Barrier Island may have suffered some damage. The engineers obviously couldn't assess it at that time. In Seaside Park, Seaside Heights, Portley Beach, Lavalette, there are a lot of water rescues currently underway. In Belmar, last night there were swift rescue teams that were going door to door, pulling people out. And some of the most iconic piers in Seaside Park, in Seaside Park and Seaside Heights, suffered serious damage. One pier suffered major damage. A roller coaster from decades ago called the Jetstar is now in the ocean. So, you know, as you can make out here, this is going to be we've suffered utter devastation. And it's going to take it's going to take a while to recover from this.
Well, good luck in the recovery, and stand firm. I'm appreciative of the fact that you joined us, and I thank you, and I wish you the best of luck. That's Justin Osiello, founding editor of the Jersey Shore Hurricane News, a Facebook-based news site founded in 2011 to cover Hurricane Irene. And James Barron also joined us, reporter for the New York Times. Thank you to Adam Sobel, who is with us as well, professor of climate and atmospheric science at Columbia University. We shift gears in our bottom half hour. Stay with us on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.